Our box for the Pulse today is the topic of creativity, and we are in it. Now, if you think of genres as boxes for making art, still life provides a pretty rigid structure. Still life pictures have a history of being art in the service of science, and that has led to some creative tensions. Peter Crimmins reports.
Still life paintings are studies of things, flowers on tables, fruit in bowls, dead animals after the hunt. It's a lowly genre, usually without much drama or prestige to it, but it's one that examines objects very closely. The Art of the American Still Life is the name of an exhibition at the Philadelphia Museum of Art right now, and it takes liberties with that definition because it includes paintings of watches, of locomotives, boxes of Brillo pads. It was curated by Mark Mitchell, who believes still life is really an examination of material culture.
Our goal is to recognize the incredible variety of still life in the American tradition. It is not one thing, and it's certainly not just flowers on a table.
Americans, especially in the early years of the new nation, had something to prove. After winning independence from England, newly minted Americans wanted to establish their own unique identity, their own politics, their own culture. And to do that, they relied on science. America had a different world of plants and animals, which Europeans had no experience of. So American artists roamed the landscape to discover this new flora and fauna. John James Audubon created a massive illustrated book of every species of bird in the United States.
When you think about Audubon's Birds of America, which has 435 plates, it is a majestic undertaking. It is like very little else in all of human history in its scale. And what he's trying to do is to record American nature.
Audubon was an ornithologist, but his artistic ambition had the upper hand. He wanted to sell books. So his pictures needed to be so beautiful that you would want to buy them and hang them over your couch. Most scientific illustrations of birds look like mugshots. There's a clear image of the front, another in profile, some detail showing feather patterns, all against a plain white background. Audubon took great effort to make his birds look good in their natural habitats, often posing dead birds with wires to get them into lively positions. It was aesthetically pleasing, but scientifically dubious. In 1826, he applied to the Academy of Natural Science in Philadelphia for membership as a scientist, and he was rejected. Archivist Robert Peck says the board at the time believed he did not have scientific rigor.
So whenever Audubon was criticized by the scientific community for not knowing the science, he said, "Ah, yes, but I know the birds in life. You guys might know what they look like from a dead specimen, but I've actually seen them feeding their young, catching their prey, flying from branch to branch."
Eventually, Audubon was accepted into the Academy, and it now has an original copy of his Birds of America prominently displayed in the library. In fact, the Academy's back rooms are filled with art. Among millions of preserved and cataloged specimens are thousands of drawings and paintings gathered over the last 200 years. Peck shows off paintings by Robert Verity Clem. He illustrated Shorebirds of North America, the definitive ornithological book published in 1967. He says Clem's watercolors are often compared to the fine art paintings of Andrew Wyeth.
A very similar palette to Andrew Wyeth. And they both have a shared aesthetic of the East Coast. So they saw light and landscapes in very similar ways. It's just where Wyeth would have had Christina on the grass in front, Clem has chosen a bird instead.
Shorebirds of North America was Clem's first and only publication. He was frustrated by the result. He was a stickler for accuracy and hated how the printing process could not recreate his colors correctly.
They weren't true to his original watercolors. And the watercolors are so subtle that if you do put them side by side, you can see there's a difference.
In the 20th century, art and science have moved in divergent directions, one tending toward expression and emotion, the other to intellectual comprehension. The irony of Clem's career is that after the publication of Shorebirds of North America, he never worked in a scientific capacity again, because in his eyes, scientific illustration was not true to life. For The Pulse, I'm Peter Crimmins.